Welcome to Sword and Staff. I'm one of your hosts, Josh Robinson, and joining me today, as always, is my co-host,
Sketchy Richie.
Sketchy, we're going to stick with the Sketchy Richie, aren't we?
Dude, it was a gift.
The listeners have dubbed Richie as Sketchy Richie, and it's caught on. Everybody knows you as Sketchy Richie now, so you're going with it.
It's better than at work. Work, they call me Witchy Richie.
Witchy Richie? Oh, yeah, that's significantly better than Witchy Richie, that's for sure.
Yep.
But on today's special edition of the Sword and Staff, Richie and I are going to be discussing and reacting to the new Rings of Power teaser that debuted at the beginning of the week during the Super Bowl. We've gave it a little bit of time, right? Yep. We let it sink in a little bit. I know that folks were wanting us to do one right off the bat on Valentine's Day. Me being a married man, I wasn't able to make that happen.
Yep.
But I think it was good to give it a little bit of time, don't you? To kind of let it sink in, get some distance from it, kind of revisit it here.
Oh, yeah. Anybody that's on my social media knows that I basically had a panic attack, like, in real time as it was happening.
Oh, poor guy.
Yep.
So we're going to – here's kind of the structure of today's episode. So we're going to watch the video. We're gonna put it up here in the corner of our screen so everybody will be able to watch it with us. And then we're going to go and we're going to react to it just right off the bat, first thoughts that kind of come to our head. And then we're going to try our best to break it down frame for frame and kind of walk through what we think's going on in it. Obviously, none of us know for certain until it comes out, but we'll try our best to kind of give an analysis of it. And then at the end of it, we'll kind of really dive a little bit deeper into what we like, what we don't like. And so that should be the structure of today's episode. So in good Tolkien fashion, I brought my Gandalf pipe with me today.
Got his Gandalf pipe. He's ready.
So we're ready to roll. All right, so this is new. We've never done this in a video before. We've never had a video live reaction like we're about to have. So here we go. I think that opening shot is amazing.
Yeah.
That's obviously new.
There's my favorite antler, guys.
Right. Harfoot. That's a magnificent shot. Yep,
look at that. Oh, there's Wifey.
Good Lord.
Potentially Gandalf.
Potentially. Cave troll. Gosh, that sequence just goes so fast.
Yep.
So fast. Oof. Big hand at the end. All right, guys. That's it. That's the trailer. And so, Richie, right off the bat, what do you think about it?
Already, right off the bat, it's a completely different reaction than I had when I first saw it.
Yeah.
When I first saw it, it was just a mixed reaction all over the place. There was things I was really concerned about, mainly being the dude in the fire.
Yeah.
Like, at first glance, it looked like some naked wild hobo, like, in the middle of, like, a firestorm, and I was like, what is this?
Yeah. Yeah, that was... I remember as I was watching it the first time, you know, whenever the Super Bowl came on, I had to go to YouTube and watch it afterwards.
Yeah.
To, like, really get into some of the details of it. And those were pretty much my reactions whenever I first saw it, too. I was like, okay, yeah, like, there's some things here that look good. And then I was super concerned about the dude at the end and the fire, though, because I was like, is this dude naked? I was like, are we going back on the nudity thing here? Yeah. Like, because we've talked about that already with the TV-14 rating and, you know, the Vanity Fair article that came out and where they talked about that this was not going to be a Middle Earth version of Game of Thrones and that it was going to be appropriate for, you know, 12, 13-year-olds and that mostly it was going to be scary rather than, like, having any kind of that thing on. But I think that we've got a good explanation of what's going on there.
Yeah.
And it's actually not something to really be concerned about. So let's go. Okay, so that's initial thoughts. Some good, some potentially concerning. We'll get into that more at the end. But let's go through, let's break it down frame by frame, and let's kind of maybe give an analysis of it and try to explain some of it. Okay. So you've got it on your iPad. I have it on my iPad.
Yeah.
So it starts off... you know, after you've got the the Prime logo here. You got the big Amazon smile. And then you get this ship that's coming through this port, looks like. Comes through this arch gate. And then, like, right off the bat, there's sun symbolism on it.
Oh, yeah.
Which obviously is pointing towards Numenor. And then, boom, you get a big view of what looks like... Okay, so here's what I'm thinking this is. So I have here Tolkien's Unfinished Tales. Now, let's be clear here, because I think that I got this wrong on the last podcast, or I think that more information has come out since then. They do not have rights to Unfinished Tales. They do not have rights to the Silmarillion or anything like that. What they have rights to are The Hobbit, Fellowship of the Ring, Two Towers, Return of the King, and the appendices here at the end of Return of the King. That's what Amazon has the rights for. A lot of this stuff, so kind of the way that so it's really what they're going to be focusing in on is Appendix A. So in Appendix A, there is there's a section here on the Kings of Numenor. And it's kind of like an overview, broad history. Like, it gives you the timelines of, like, first, second, third age, you know, that kind of thing. All that's in the appendixes here. So I am going to read a little bit from here. So Numenor is mentioned in the appendix and a lot of the geography of it. I think that this particular city that we're seeing in the opening scene here is, and this is me looking at Tolkien's maps here, I think that this is the port city of Romana in Numenor. And so Tolkien says in his section here, a description of Numenor, he says that that Romana is the greatest of ports in Numenor, the greatest of port cities. So I think that's what we're seeing here. I mean, this looks like a super grand port city.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you've got the statue here. The guy's holding the sword with the right hand. He's got the hand elevated with the left, right? And then, you know, you've got these arches, like, over here on the corner. I mean, you've got this city over here. It looks excellent, I think.
Yep.
I think that's an excellent shot to open up with. Interesting thing here in the back is you see this mountain in the background kind of overshadowing, right, kind of looming in the background. That is it's called Meneltarma. And so what it means is it's the Holy Mountain. And basically what the Holy Mountain is, it's mentioned in the appendix A of The Return of the King and the end of it. It's also mentioned in other places like Silmarillion, Unfinished Tales. But basically what Meneltarma is it is a mountain on at the center of Numenor. And basically what happens there is... religious practices are carried out on that mountain. That's why it's called the Holy Mountain. That's what Meneltarma means. It means the Pillar of the Heavens, not Mountain of the Heavens, Pillar of the Heavens. So I'm going to read a little bit here from Unfinished Tales to kind of give you an idea of the significance of this mountain in the background. It's just sitting there, but it's really important in Numenor. And so it says, near the center of the Middle-Amar stood the tall mountain called Meneltarma, Pillar of the Heavens, sacred to the worship of Eru Iluvatar. No building, no raised altar, not even a pile of undressed stones ever stood there, and no other likeness of the temple did the Numenorians possess in all of the days of their grace until the coming of Sauron. So they never had a temple. They always worshipped on this mountain until Sauron came. Right. There, no tool or weapon had ever been born, and there none might speak any word save the king only. Thrice, only in each year, the king spoke, offering prayer for the coming year at the, I'm going to butcher these, I'm guessing these are Elvish words, Eruk-Ymir, in the first days of spring, praise of Eru Iluvatar in the Eru Latalale in midsummer, and thanksgiving to him in the Eru Hantale at the end of summer. All these times the king ascended the mountain on foot, followed by a great concourse of people clad in white and garland, but silent. At the times of the three prayers, they did not descend, remaining, he's talking about, you know, eagles would land on the mountain there. But it says, you know, at the time of the three prayers, the eagles did not descend, remaining in the sky, hovering above the people. They were called the witnesses of Manwë, who is one of the Valar.
Yep.
And they were believed to be sent from him, from Ammon, to keep watch upon the holy mountain and upon the land. So I'm pretty sure that this is the port city that we were talking about, and that this is Meneltarma in the background, a religious mountain.
Oh, yeah. When you showed me the map the other night when we were on the FaceTime call, it really does line up.
Yeah, it does. And so, you know, whenever you look at the map, you... Like right here is Ramenna, right here, and it's this little tiny port city right here. You can see it, like in terms of the other one. So Numenor has got this star; it's a 5-point star, right? Yep. And so right here, though, is the smallest of the ports, but that's the greatest of the port cities. And this looks to be like a smaller port, so it matches up with Ramenna. And whenever you see it here, you see that Meneltarma would be looming right in the background, just like it is. So pretty sure that this is what that is going on here. So now in the second scene, we get a big overview.
Oh yeah. This is the fly through that
the fly through
we were kind of hoping for. Yeah. At least somewhat.
And right off the bat, that looks like Middle Earth to me.
Yep. That's what I thought. That was in the first initial reaction.
Yeah.
Those first two scenes were what I was happy with the most.
Yeah. And I saw people say, oh, this doesn't feel like Middle Earth to me. But to me, it feels like Middle Earth to me. First off, we need to say this. It doesn't feel like Middle Earth in comparison to what?
You know, to what? To Peter Jackson's vision or right. to Tolkien's work?
Right. Yeah. So... let's be clear here. Most people are saying it doesn't feel like Middle Earth in comparison to Peter Jackson.
Right.
That's how most people understand Middle Earth to look. But the reality is that's Peter Jackson's take on what Middle Earth looks like. That's his interpretation of it.
There's probably a whole generation that came to know Middle Earth strictly through the movies before mm-hmm. the books. So
yeah,
it's understandable in some light that
it is. But I think from this shot right here, this fly through.
Yep.
I think that it looks super consistent with Peter Jackson's work. Oh, it does. Looks like Middle Earth. And it should. It's filmed in New Zealand. Shot in the same spot. So
I mean, honestly, if you were to tell me that this was a cut scene from The Hobbit or something, I would absolutely believe it.
Yeah, I would too. But here we get the two hunter figures again that we saw in the Vanity Fair article. They're walking here on this summit, and then they've got the antlers on their back. Yep. What those are? Who knows? But
hopefully Thranduil didn't lose his moose stallion there.
Right. Yeah. Rides. No doubt. And so after this scene, we cut to another scene of, and this is who I'm pretty sure is actually narrating the teaser.
Yep.
This is one of the Harfoots, or I guess you call Harfeet. I don't know. The plural. I don't know.
We don't know how that works.
We don't know how that works.
Hobbitese.
Yeah. And so this is Harfoot. And she sounds very Sam Gamgee-like to me. Like the cadence to her voice.
Yeah.
Like it kind of feels Sam, like Sam. So anyway, so we're introduced to her. She's looking at somebody. So.
Well, I mean, even in The Lord of the Rings, the main trilogy, the series is sort of carried on Sam's optimism. Like it balances out the despair that the others have. Sam is like the counterbalance to that. So
right.
It's interesting.
Yeah. And so after that, it cuts to before the king. So that's obviously before Aragorn, right?
Yeah.
And then we cut to this huge shot of this massive waterfall and this icy land. I've read of stories of Galadriel, you know, in the north hunting Sauron and, you know, that kind of thing. She, you know, so I'm thinking that's probably what this is.
Well, she was the commander of the northern armies of the elves. So, I mean, it makes sense, like, toward the areas of, like, Gundabad, Angmar. That's what I thought when I first saw it. That's what it reminded me of. Like, in The Hobbit, when you see the lands north of, like, Erebor, where Angmar and all those places were. That's what it looks like to me.
Yeah. And so it actually cuts to her right after that, right? And so she's got that dagger that we were talking about in the posters.
Yes.
Right? It's got the two sides, the gold and the silver side to it. And she's, looks like she's scaling this frozen waterfall.
Yep.
So then she looks up.
Is she, I don't think she's alone on that waterfall, is she? Like, look down, like, or is it just...
I can't tell. It looks like she's alone to me, but
no, it's... No, I think down at the bottom, and if you let it play through, mm-hmm. There's somebody else's cloak flapping, like, toward the bottom there, off to the side. Do you see what I'm talking about?
I'm going back here and looking. Yep, I see it. Yep. Does look like that there are multiple people scaling it with her. Yeah, I didn't notice that.
Yeah, and on the other side, too. On either side, there's cloaks flapping in the wind.
There's
on there.
One on the right and one directly underneath her.
Yep.
So, that's interesting. Did not notice that before.
So, she's not alone in her scaling there.
Nope. And then we've got another scene. It says, before the fellowship. All right, so this is before driving home the fact that this is in the second age. Right?
Yep.
Then we got a picture of the dude, the non-canonical character. I can't remember his name. But he's on the raft.
We'll just call him Problematic Pete.
Problematic Pete. Yep. So we've got Problematic Pete. And then we cut from Problematic Pete to the, I can't remember his name either, Arondil or something along those lines.
Arondir or something like
that. Yeah, one of the new Sylvan Elf. And he's catching an arrow out of midair.
Yeah.
And he's pulling it back around. He's putting it into his bow, and he's shooting it. So, very elvish.
Yeah.
Very elvish, very Legolas-like. He fires it, and then we get the scene that says, before the ring. And we see, and this is interesting.
Yeah.
So, I saw a lot of people who were confused. They thought that that was the arrow that he shoots, but it's obviously not.
No, I didn't think that at all when I saw it.
No, I didn't think that either. And actually, there was another Vanity Fair article that came out breaking this trailer down. And usually, I wouldn't use Vanity Fair as a primary source, but Vanity Fair has been shown the first, I think, 3-4 episodes of the show. So, if anybody knows what these are showing, it's Vanity Fair. So, they seem to allude in their article that this wasn't... At first, I thought that maybe it was a meteor, or perhaps it was weaponry, like something...
What it reminded me of was in Hobbit, when you see Galadriel banish Sauron to the east.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He goes in like this big flaming ball through the clouds. That's what it reminded me of when I first saw it.
I think that that's fairly close. I really do. That's with the theory that I have. I think that's close. So they seem to allude to it's a person.
Yep.
And I thought that maybe maybe somebody's got like a big slingshot, and they're firing, fiery stuff into a city. That's not what's going on. They seem to allude that this is a person, and we'll get into who we think it is at the end. I think but I'll say this. The person that this supposedly is also the same person whose hand is revealed at the end. And who's also in the fire.
Yeah, I was going to say, also in the fire.
Also in the fire. Yeah. So. Okay, then we get a picture of an elf who seems to be looking up, and he's concerned. This is Gil-galad.
I was going to say that was Gil-galad.
This is Gil-galad. That's been confirmed. Gil-galad was also involved in the War for the Ring. We see him in Peter Jackson's films at the beginning of Fellowship whenever Isildur cuts off the ring from Sauron's hand. So he's there.
Did you see the people like hating on that article that was saying like the Vanity Fair should have put spoiler warnings in it because they were alluding to Gil-galad's death?
No.
Like toward the War of the Rings. I was like,
that's in Tolkien's writing.
Yeah.
It's also it's alluded to even in the films too. So anyway.
Yeah,
it's kind of ridiculous. But he's standing somewhere. I'm assuming this is Lindon that he's at.
Yeah.
Because he is, if I'm not mistaken, he is the king of Lindon. That's the kingdom I think that he rules over. So I'm guessing that's a shot of Lindon. So then we get a shot of Galadriel riding a horse with armor. And this looks like very Rohan to me.
Yep.
It feels very Rohanian. And then we get another cutscene real quick. And I'm not sure who this is still yet. I've heard Galadriel. I've heard Elrond. I think it looks like Elrond. I don't know who it is.
That I don't think is Galadriel. Like you're talking about the scene with the cave troll.
The next, the scene with the cave troll. And so we got.
I don't know. That's not Galadriel.
No, I don't think that it is either. It looks like Elrond to me, and that's what I've heard. It's hard to tell just because they're wearing like
this.
Looks like Mithril.
Yep.
But they've got a cover on their head too, and so we see them encountering a cave troll, and then a new legend begins this fall. This next scene is very interesting, and here's why I think that it's interesting. I think so. Originally, whenever we saw this, we were trying to figure this out. We thought that this was some elvish place, right? We were like, is this Lorien?
I was convinced this was...
But Lorien, I don't think... I'd have to go back and look. I know that Rivendell does not exist at this point in the timeline. I'm pretty sure that Lorien doesn't either. I would have to go look and confirm that, but you Tolkien nerds out there, you can correct me on that. But I have a theory on what this is. I think that this is at the top of Minas Tarma in Numenor. And I think that what we're seeing here is one of the three religious festivals. So whenever you look at it and you zoom in, you can see that you're at the top of a mountain. Waters are flowing off of it, right? And then we also, in Unfinished Tales, and again, some of this is in the appendixes of Return of the King, we saw that the king led three pilgrimages up the mountain, and his followers came with him clad in white.
Yep.
Whenever you look here, you see someone standing in kingly robes with a crown on. If you zoom in, it's like right here at the center of it, right there where the E is in Legends. That looks to be the king, so I'm guessing that's maybe Ar-Pharazôn. I don't know. I know he's in this. So I don't know. But this it appears to be at least before Sauron is there.
Yeah.
So maybe it's, you know, things are going good, but there's all kinds of followers around him who are clad in white. So I think that's what that is. Could be entirely wrong. That's my theory. I think this is Minas Tarma.
Yeah, I was convinced it was maybe somewhere in Lindon because of the gold sort of theme to it. But when you read that part of the book about the servants like in white and things like that, it really matched up for me.
Yeah, it's obviously on top of a mountain too. Like you can tell by looking at it, like there's clouds down here in the right corner.
Yep.
So like we're pretty high up wherever we are here. And so I think that's what it is. And then we cut real quick. We've got a real fast sequence here. So we get Durin the Fourth, and he looks like a dwarf to me. Yep. And then we get Elrond looking up really quick, and it looks like he's holding a dwarvish weapon.
Yep.
Like, you were the one that pointed that out to me. That looks like a dwarvish weapon.
That is absolutely a dwarvish weapon.
Yeah, it's blocky. And then
even the people in the background, they look very dwarvish.
Yeah.
Like the silhouettes that you can see.
Yeah.
And I saw somebody on, actually, TikTok that was referencing Elrond's shoulder pieces here, the feathers.
Yeah.
Referencing his mother. Like, there's a story in Silmarillion of his mother being turned into a... Is it a...
Yeah, I see what you're talking
like
about.
Like a swan or something that carries one of the Silmarils? And...
I'm not sure.
They think that that's a reflection of his heritage, like the feathers.
I'd have to go back and look. But there's stone there, so this looks like it's maybe underground somewhere, maybe Khazad Dûm, who knows? We know that we're going to get to see Khazad Dûm here. Because in the next scene, we
Moria was around at this time, right? Thriving?
Yeah, so, yeah. Same thing.
Yep.
I can't remember if Khazad Dûm is the elfish name for Moria, or if it's a dwarvish name for Moria. It's the same, but I can't remember what name, what Khazad Dûm, what whose name. Let me see real quick.
Oh yeah, I know that they were like one and the same, but I just didn't know if like.
Yeah. Yeah, I just can't remember if that name was dwarvish or not. I don't guess it really matters. Anyway. I can't find it. Yeah, but Moria is gone at this point. And so in the next scene...
Well, it makes sense that Elrond would be there. I mean, you have the Elvish Gate at Moria. Like, it was a...
Right. Yeah.
A symbol of friendship, that they could, a gate that they could pass through into the kingdom, so...
In the next scene, real quick, is you actually see the princess of Moria. And it looks like I don't know if she's like singing.
I think it said in the article that she was singing.
Yeah, I didn't know if she was offering prayer, if she was like wailing and weeping or what, but really quick cutscene to her, so we're definitely going to get to see more.
Did they confirm in the article that is Durin's wife?
I don't know. I'd have to go back and look.
I'm
betting that it is.
I'm almost for sure that I read that.
I think that it is. Yeah, I'm assuming that is the wife of Durin the Fourth. Since he's the prince of Moria, she's the princess. So, unless they're brother and sister, but it doesn't look to me to be the case. They're different races.
Yep.
So, I don't think that they're brother and sister. So, I would say that they're probably married, I would assume. Then we get a cut real quick to Galadriel on the raft with Problematic Pete.
Problematic Pete.
And then he pulls back her hair and we see her elvish ear.
Yep.
So I don't know if she's been hiding it from him that she's elvish. Who knows? But that's what's going on there in that one. And then I think after here, real quick.
There we go.
It's super quick afterwards. We see the figure of what almost looks like a nude man in a fire, reaching out for the hand of someone smaller to the left bottom. And I can totally tell by looking at this guy who he is now. This is totally the guy who is playing the stranger.
Yep.
Which that was confirmed. So in the Vanity Fair article, they actually say that this person is linked to the fireball that was flying through the air earlier in the trailer. And this is played by the person who they casted to play what they're calling the stranger. And yeah, I think it was the stranger.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it looks like he's reaching out and grabbing the hand of a Harfoot. Also, he's not actually nude. He actually does have a bottom on. It's very difficult to see here in the next scene that you see it a little bit better if you pause it. But it's also confirmed, I think, in the Vanity Fair article that I looked at too. So he's not nude. He's reaching out. He's in fire. At first, we thought it was a dwarf. Or did you think it was one of the Valar?
I didn't really know what it was. I mean, it looked, at first glance, it was so odd.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking back through, like, Silmarillion, through Unfinished Tales, trying to line up what this could be.
Yeah.
And I had no clue. Like,
We'll save who we think it is at the end.
First, I was like, is this, like, something to do with the dwarves? Is this Aule? Yeah. Is this, like...
Yeah, that's
you know.
I have thoughts on who it is. So, at this point, I'll say it this way. It appears
Josh has more than thoughts. He has a whole theory here.
Yeah, I've got a theory. So, at this point, it's someone who comes from above, like the heavens.
Yep.
Right? So, it's somebody who appears to be part of that realm where Eru Iluvatar is at, right?
Entering into
Middle Earth, right? So that's interesting. We'll get to it at the end. Next scene, it's him again. You can see in there if you look, pause it. But it's a side shot of him in the fire, reaching out, grabbing the hand of the Harfoot. I'm assuming that's the same Harfoot that we saw earlier.
Yep.
Because that's whose hand we see at the end as well. So going on, we see a dwarf smashing some stone. We see the elf.
Is it the elf?
I think it's the elf. It's hard to. It's really quick.
Because is that this one that has the shackle on his leg?
Yeah, I'm gonna try to pause it real quick.
Yeah, right here it is. What does that look like to you?
That looks like the Sylvan elf to me. That's who it looks like to me. I don't know. I got to pause it. Looking at the face, that's who it looks like. But I could be wrong. Is that an elf ear?
Yeah, I think. Now that I look at it, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm thinking this is the Sylvan elf we saw earlier. Could be wrong about that. It goes so quickly.
Yeah. Whoever it is like in a shackle. Yeah. Though.
Whoever it is has got shackles. So they're swinging something, and then this is confirmed. We see the end scene here. One of the end scenes. We see a short-haired elfish man crying and an orc here in front of him.
Yep.
And this is confirmed to be Galadriel's brother, Finrod.
Yep.
Right? So his helmet's gone. He's crying. Everybody else has their helmets on, so who knows what just happened. Maybe somebody's died. Who knows? But that's who this is. It's Finrod. And then we cut to what I think is the most important and meaningful scene in the whole thing. We see this large, dirty hand dressed in gray reaching out and holding the hand of a Harfoot. So, it has also been confirmed in the Vanity Fair article that this hand that is dirty here and dressed in gray belongs to the man who was in the fire, who is also the same person who came through as the ball of fire in the sky.
Yep.
So here's my theory. I think that this is Gandalf the Grey. And I think that I'm trying to think of how to say it. A pre-Third Age version of the same person.
Like Olorin, like his his first name.
Yeah. Okay, so what we do know is this is the hand of the stranger.
Yep.
Okay, and the person who's in the fire is the same character that they have casted to play the stranger. Now, I believe that the best explanation for it is that it's probably Gandalf.
Yeah. I saw people saying that it was the stranger could refer to Sauron being a deceiver that just shows up in...
He does hold an apple in the poster.
In Middle Earth, but...
But at the same time, Gandalf is very associated with nature. So it's not outside of the realm for the apple to be,
And he just, the hand, the guy, it just looks too rough and sort of worn to be the way that Sauron's described. Like, he's literally masked as one of the High Elves.
Well, that, and he's depicted as being very beautiful in this series, and he's very deceptive. This is not the hand of somebody who is very beautiful and very deceptive.
Right.
Hold on a second here. Okay, so... Kind of here's my theory. Let me pull up my notes here. All right. Yeah. So, Gandalf. He is a Maiar, right? Which is one of the lower angelic beings in the world of Middle Earth. So you have the Valar, who are higher angelic spirits, and then you have the Maiar, who also kind of serve alongside of them. Originally, his name is Alurin, and that's his name in Quenya. And he was one of the Ishtar, and he was dispatched to Middle-earth in the Third Age to combat the threat of Sauron. So he joins Thorin and his company to reclaim the Lonely Mountain. He helped the Fellowship destroy the One Ring, right, et cetera, et cetera. So, interestingly, he was originally called Alurin. He was accounted to be the wisest of the Maiar, and he was created by Iluvatar before the music of the Ainur.
The wisdom, the apple symbolism there?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I see it.
And so he was at the beginning of time, amongst the Ainur, and he entered into Ea. And so, in his youth, he became one of the Maiar, who served Manwë, Varda, Ermo, and Nienna. And, get this, he was associated with light and fire, much like Varda. Yet his ways often took him to Nienna, from whom he learned pity and patience. He loved the elves, but he walked unseen among them and wore the guise of an elf, and he sent them fair visions in the heart and made them wiser. So throughout his life, he followed the example of Nienna, taking pity and sorrows on the children of Iluvatar, drawing those who listened to him out of despair. So you kind of see that, too, in the... it's in The Hobbit. It's in the Battle of the Five Armies. It's... I can't remember who it was he's talking to. It was Bilbo at the end of the movie, right before they get to the borders of the Shire. And he's like, I should like to keep a wizard with me. They seem to bring good luck.
Yep.
And, he talks about what encouragement and luck he brings. And you see that here, right? He draws people out of despair, that kind of thing. And you see that in Peter Jackson's depictions of him, too. Like, he encourages the men of Gondor.
Right.
Right. Whenever, you know, it looks like that they're about
and
to fight.
And also
the
his natural characteristics there make a lot of sense of why he's given the Elvish Ring of Power that's associated with fire.
Yeah. Yeah. So here's where it gets interesting. So it says later on down here in his description, in his biography, he began his sojourn in Middle Earth during many years he walked among the elves as a stranger.
Yep.
Living among them, learning
the
from
stranger,
them and teaching
there
them.
There we go.
Yep. So unlike Saruman, Aloran did not take up a single permanent residence and never went to the east, apparently restricting his activities to the westlands of Middle Earth. So the elves name him Mithrandir, which means the Grey Pilgrim. So a pilgrim is someone who's kind of like a stranger,
yep.
Right? There's somebody who's in a land that doesn't belong to them, kind of like a sojourner as well.
Yep.
So all of the, like, so he's a sojourner, he's a pilgrim, he's a stranger. All of these things are related. And so he's also dressed in gray as well, which I think, so you see the fireball, which would signal that this is a Maiar coming to Earth. He's associated with fire. This is a fireball. He's in the fire, the fire, reaching for the hand for the Harfoot. He's dressed in gray. If you go and you look at Peter Jackson's iteration of Gandalf from The Hobbit and look at the hand at the end of this trailer, they look almost identical. Very dirty, gray, ripped, tattered gray. Looks super
very,
very, very
humble looking.
Yep, very humble looking. It also strengthens his connections, I think, to the hobbits in Middle-earth in the Third Age here with the Harfoots, or the Harfeet, whatever. I don't know.
Yeah.
So I think that's who it is. I think that makes the most sense.
You said, he's overly fond of the hobbits throughout the whole Hobbit Lord of the Rings series.
Mm-hmm.
Like, always coming to their defense and speaking on their behalf. So,
that's
right.
Yep. So, also the person who plays the stranger, if you go back and look at the posters, he's dressed in tattered gray, and you see at the bottom of the picture a long gray beard.
Yep.
So I think, without a doubt, and the person who's in the fire has a long gray beard too. It's hard to see, but it's the same person. So I think it's Gandalf.
Yep.
That's who I think it is. Now this theory isn't without problems. I think it's the best theory, but there are problems with it. And so here's the problem. As I said earlier, Gandalf the Grey does not begin his sojournings in Middle Earth until the Third Age. This is taking place in the Second Age.
Now, that's him as Gandalf the Grey.
Right. So, this probably gets us to the end of our episode here, where we're going to talk about likes and dislikes. So, here's what I think's going on with this, and this could fall into my dislikes. I don't think that they're sticking super, super close to the source material. And here's why. I don't think that they can. I don't think that they have a lot of source material to work with. So we just found out this past week that I thought for sure that they were going to be working from Unfinished Tales and the Silmarillion. They are not. They do not have the rights for that. So what they do have the rights for, and what they are primarily working with here, is The Hobbit.
Like, I think now we have a better understanding of why they have so many non-canonical characters.
Yes.
Now.
Yep. It totally makes sense of why there's more non-canonical characters.
Because at the time, I was like, what service does this do for the plot when they literally have a mountain of content to work with?
We talked about that in the last episode. Like, if they stick to the source material, it should be okay. There's plenty of it. Yeah. But the reality is we've learned since then that, no, actually, they don't have a ton of source material. They're really working with Appendix A at the end of the Return of the King. And while it is an overview of that time and that era, it's not as detailed as you're going to find in the Silmarillion or Unfinished Tales. So basically what they have is they have this overview of this age and these events and these places and these people, but they're going to have to go in and fill in the gaps and make it a cohesive story.
Yep.
So that's why they're doing the non-canonical characters, and that's why I think that this is Gandalf. I think it's a fan service, number one, and I think that they're putting him in there to help complete the story that they just don't have source material for. So that's what.
Because literally in Peter Jackson's Hobbit and Lord of the Rings, you have Gandalf that shows up to begin those journeys.
That's right.
So it's sort of carried on his shoulders through the through each of those. So it makes sense that he would sort of play the same role in this as well.
Yeah. So I, even though he's not in the Second Age canonically, I think that's what's going on.
Well, as Gandalf the Grey.
That's
but
true.
But sort of as Olorin, or however you say that name. I mean, you even see when he comes back as Gandalf the White, like he has this sort of faded, foggy memory of even who he was as Gandalf the Grey.
He's like, yes, that's what
they call
me. He
has to be
me.
Reminded that that's who he was.
Right. Yeah. So I think that's what's going on here.
Yep.
And so, all right, so let me ask you, what do you think about all of this?
Like on the whole or the Gandalf part, like by itself?
No. Well, I mean, you can talk about the Gandalf part if you want, but as a whole.
After a little bit of time has gone by, after I've watched the trailer a few more times and had time to sit and think on things, I really like what I see. I really do.
You just blew people's heads.
Yeah.
You just blew people's minds. All the Tolkien purists are now angry.
They're writing stuff
off. Here's
well,
my...
I was skeptical, highly skeptical at the beginning. I had things I was concerned about. Like, I was like, all right, there's a naked hobo dancing in the fire. There's invented characters that's just scattered everywhere that's like Trojan horses carrying an agenda.
Yeah.
But now, I don't know, I'm just less skeptical, I would say.
Yeah. Well, I think it's what time does. I think time gives you... time to step back and to look at things from various perspectives. And I think that what everybody did with this trailer is they all reacted immediately to it.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, even podcasts that I enjoy.
Honestly, I think they were expecting it to be a blatantly woke agenda.
Yeah.
And they were, as soon as it dropped, they were trying to find it.
Yeah, I think so. And the reality is I, until we see it, like this is a very short teaser. I mean, we just spent 42 minutes unpacking it, and it's, like, just over a minute.
Well, again, people talking about that it doesn't look or feel like Middle-earth to them.
Yeah.
Like, according to Peter Jackson's vision. But I know we were talking about, to me, from reading The Silmarillion, reading The Hobbit, reading Lord of the Rings, it matches the feeling that you get when you read those books, those source material.
I think that that's a very subjective thing.
Yep.
Like... You know, we were talking about this earlier. Like, it doesn't look like Middle-earth in comparison to what?
Yeah.
Like, what Middle-earth looks like is, by nature, subjective, because Tolkien has created a secondary world. He would not like me saying imaginary. An imaginative secondary world so that you could subjectively imagine it in your own
mind.
Right,
and he left that to you to sort of paint the picture of this looks like.
Yeah, I mean, like, okay, like... Well, I don't have it with me, but in the edition, the one volume edition of Lord of the Rings that I have that you actually picked up for me as a Christmas gift, it's got Tolkien's art in it. But there is a preface kind of at the beginning of it talking about how Tolkien did not like creating art for Lord of the Rings. To him, it was a kind of a private hobby, and he was very sensitive about it because he wasn't an artist, and people would kind of come down on him and be hard on him about it. And so, and one of the things that he wanted to do is he didn't want to do that because he didn't want to taint in your mind what Middle-earth looks like.
Right.
So, yeah, so I guess it's like, it doesn't feel like Middle-earth in comparison to what? Peter Jackson? Yeah. That's the, you know, that's what we have. And so, and I think that looking at it, it looks a lot like Peter Jackson. Maybe The Hobbit, but it still looks like Peter Jackson. But anyway, I think that's a very subjective thing, and I don't think that's a legitimate criticism. I just don't.
Right.
I
mean, just a lot of people talk about how Tolkien was inspired by, like, the Celtic nations, like Scotland, Ireland, even, like, Switzerland and those landscapes.
Yeah.
Whereas for Peter Jackson's vision, we get New Zealand. So,
yeah.
I mean.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
I think that it looks... Now, I'll say this. I do have concerns. You know, the creation of non-canonical characters is always concerning, I think. I mean, I watched The Hobbit this morning before I got here, and I was watching the Battle of the Five Armies, and I was watching the bit with Tauriel and, you know, all that, and it just... You know, I get it. Like, it's... So I think that there's some concern there. Like... It's my major concern is that they don't have the rights to all of the source material they need for the Second Age. That's my big, big concern right now. Yeah. Like, and that they do have some of it, but they don't have all of it. And so because of that, they're going to have to fill it in. And I don't know how I feel about that. Maybe they do it well. Maybe they don't. I guess we'll have to wait and see. So I guess that's my big concern right now.
My question is there enough
that's
original source material in the appendices that it serves as a structure to build on and that makes it passable?
Yeah, that's my thing too. Is, man, I read Appendix A the other day in like, you know, an hour or something, and how are you going to stretch out something like that?
Yeah.
You know, for that amount of time. You know, I don't know if the goal is to acquire more of Tolkien's intellectual property, you know, or something like that.
Even through Hobbit and the Lord of the Rings trilogy, the characters will reference things from the first, second, and ages. So, I mean, they have those little bits and pieces to go on to.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
I don't know. But I'll say this. I thought that the teaser was okay.
Yeah.
You know, I know that the Tolkien fandom was all up in arms about it, and everybody's like, this is trash, and, you know, whatever, but...
Honestly, I think that was my biggest problem with it, was I was comparing it to Peter's vision there.
Yeah, yeah. And I can see why people would be upset about that, but, I mean, even at the end of the day, I mean, to me, I thought that they looked a lot alike. Now, granted, it looked more like The Hobbit to me than...
The
CGI was
Lord of the Rings. Even Return of the King was like over 20 years ago now.
Yeah.
So I mean,
yeah. I think that the originals look better than The Hobbit.
Yep.
And it's because there's less CGI in them. But I could see that. Like people were talking about Galadriel whenever she was climbing the waterfall, and that it looked like Tomb Raider. You know, she looked like a video game, and I could see it whenever I went back and saw it. But or whenever I went back and watched it, but. You know, it could have been way worse. Like, it could have been way, way worse. They could have showed it. There could have been woke stuff in it. It could have just been really bad. And I don't think it was that.
I mean, even CGI can only take you so far. I mean, what's the alternative? To have this actress, like, scaling a glacier somewhere with a dagger? I mean, do they really want...
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So, I don't know. I mean... I didn't see it as the big corruption that, I guess, Tolkien fandom did.
I mean, this is high fantasy with some just epic scenes in it. I mean, CGI even, it can only take you so far with it.
Yeah. So I guess that's our take on it. Overall, I thought that Numenor looked great. I thought that that the fly-through shots of Middle-earth looked like Middle-earth in comparison to Peter Jackson. I think that there were just enough mysteries in the trailer to keep me interested in what's going on and what they're going to do with this storyline. And so, yeah, I think I think that a lot of people, like, looking at some of the stuff that was shown, like, you know, Lindon and Gil-galad and then... Numenor and the Minotaurma and what looks to be the religious gathering that's happening on a Minotaurma and Galadriel leading armies. Like, that stuff's all close to the source material. So, like, why would I not be happy with that? You know?
Yeah.
Now, like, and the stuff that's not a part of the source material, like, as of right now, that has me interested enough to guess what they're doing with it. Like, are they bringing Gandalf into this? You know what I mean? So, I don't know. That's where I'm at with it. At the end of the day, I guess we'll figure out more whenever they release a new trailer, whenever that is, or whenever it comes out in September. So that's my take on it. So I don't know if you got anything you want to add to that. But.
Another thing that I loved about it was the sun, moon, and stars symbolism is a lot more like visible in this teaser. It's almost like it is in the books. I mean, Tolkien really makes... an effort to highlight that symbolism even within the elves. Like, I look at, like, you see the two trees, like sun and moon symbolism, and even in Galadriel's dagger there you see the sun and the moon, it bleeds together in the dagger. Even with men and elves being the two children of Iluvatar, It's sun and moon symbolism there as well. So to see that reflected in the work here, it's definitely something that I like.
Yeah. It definitely, I definitely didn't think that it was the terrible crapshoot that people were making it out to be. Now, don't get me wrong. I think that there's some possible concerns, but I'm not going to lose any sleep over it. and spam Facebook with my Tolkien memes.
Yeah. I say the problematic characters, the invented characters, the non-canonical characters are still problematic, and until proven otherwise, we're going to remain skeptical of them. But
I'm interested. I'll say, I think that's a good clarification. I'm definitely skeptical of them, but what they're showing in the trailer, I'm also interested in seeing what they're going to do with it. And so, I think that's a good clarification. Well, all right. Hey, we're coming in at 50 minutes on this. I can't believe that we took 50 minutes to dissect a 90-second trailer or something. 90-second
trailer. You know? That's us.
Yeah, but that's how it is. And so, you got anything else before we sign off on this episode?
We could go on all day. I've got a ton, but...
Yeah, okay. Well, guys, hey, thank you so much for listening. These episodes are going to drop on Patreon before they drop anywhere else. So if you want episodes faster and if you want exclusive bonus content, you need to head on over to Patreon and become a patron. You can get the Sword and Staff Uncut for just $5 a month. We even have people who are buying into some of our other higher tiers. And what's some of the things they get with that, Richie? They get Patreon calls, right? We're fixing to start doing that once a month, where we basically do Zoom calls with our patrons.
We have a sort of a creative collective going on where we build world build together and things like that. We have like a merch box that we do, and I don't know, just various things to the different tiers. I mean, we have people that subscribe to all of our tiers, even up to $50.
We do. We have subscribers in all of our tiers right now. And so we just want to say to you guys who have done that, thank you so much. We're glad that you enjoy the conversations.
Yep.
And that you enjoy watching us sit around and talk about Tolkien, smoke pipes, and that kind of stuff.
There we go.
So definitely appreciative. And so if you guys want that, you can head on over to Patreon, www.patreon.com/swordandstafforder. You get the Sword and Staff Uncut for just $5 a month. You get bonus content. You get Zoom calls. You get the Patreon Q&As that we do. You get all that stuff. And so head on over, check it out. And, if you don't have anything else, I don't either.
I'm good.
All right. Well, guys, thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.
See you then.
See you.